Well, in the global conversation about the Muhammad cartoons, let's try to get beyond the double standards this morning. Stipulated, there are double standards on each side, and they are to be deplored. Double standard one, Arab governments foment riots against the Muhammad cartoons while they sponsor hateful media themselves about Jews. True enough. Double standard two, the Danish newspaper that sponsored the original Muhammad cartoon contest turned down a cartoon about Jesus specifically because it might offend Christians. True enough. But these twin double standards should be the beginning of the conversation, not the end. What are the single standards we should be aiming for? If there can be any single standard in such a multifaceted world, everyone is for both free speech and religious sensitivity, and everyone is against demagoguery. But what do we say after that when the world is in flames? I think we have two guests to start out today who can have a piece of that conversation. They are both Muslim Americans, one Indian, one Pakistani. One runs an interfaith organization in Chicago. One is a Silicon Valley technical writer who also writes a blog. Both are disenchanted with the us against them simplicity of the global dialogue or lack thereof today on all sides. So from Chicago, we welcome Dr. Eboo Patel, founder and executive director of a group called the Interfaith Youth Corps. He's also co-author of a forthcoming book, Building the Interfaith Movement Beyond Dialogue to Action, to be published by Roman and Littlefield. And from Silicon Valley, Sabahat Ashraf, a writer and activist who writes the blog ifuckhere.blogspot.com, and by the way, local boy makes good. He used to be an intern for this program. So hello, Eboo, and hello again, Sabahat. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning, Brian.
Sabahat, when did we
last... Long-time listener, first-time guest.
That's right. Long-time producer, first time. When did we last talk? Was it late 90s when you left WNYC?
Yeah, I left the New York area end of 2000, actually.
End of 2000. Well, a few things have happened in the world since then. Thanks for keeping me on your mailing list with your really interesting blog. Eboo, what is the Interfaith Youth Corps?
We're an organization that's based in Chicago, but that works across four continents, and we bring young people from different faith communities together to work on exactly what you talked about earlier, which is shared values. How does Judaism and Islam and Christianity, Buddhism and Hinduism, and on, how do they share values like hospitality and service and compassion and peace? And then what can young people do to concretely express these values through, for example, building houses together with Habitat for Humanity and then articulating how their different faith communities inspire that kind of work?
So there are a lot of specific things in the news that we could talk about, from the cartoon riots to Dubai Ports World to Iraq to all kinds of things, to get at some of these shared values and how the, you know, how the global dialogue might be improved. But let's try to get in this way a little bit. Eboo, you wrote an essay on the cartoon riots that starts out with you putting yourself kind of on both sides. How are you on both sides?
Well, I begin the essay by saying, you know, the question people ask me, do I believe in free speech? And I say, of course I believe in it to the teeth. Well, am I hurt by the cartoons of the Prophet, peace be upon him? I'm deeply hurt by them. And so I think that, not unlike many people, I not only see both sides of this, but I feel both sides of it. And I actually think that that is one of the amazing possibilities of the contemporary world, is that we have multiple identities, multiple commitments. We live around people from such dramatically different backgrounds that we are inevitably going to be conflicted, if not internally, then at the very least in our neighborhood, in our school, in our campus, in our company. And so my big question is, how do, when we come to those difficult situations where we feel conflicted, how do we not immediately polarize? And my frustration over the discourse around the cartoons is why it was so immediately dichotomized between free speech and religious sensitivity. My hope would be that we could have the discussion within the paradigm of coexistence. We have to learn how to live together. How can we best do that? And I think that if we begin the discussion that way, we will find a huge number of resonances between, for example, the Western tradition and the Muslim tradition, between Muslims who live in the Muslim world world and Christians who live in the West. And I'm much more interested in having the discussion of what values do we share, what resonances can we find, than how can we each point out the double standard that the other side is using.
And we'll go deeper on that in a minute. But Sabahat, as I read your blog, you're also trying to get beyond everyone's party line, and I would say your BS detector is always going off from reading your blog regarding the demagogues on all sides. Where would you begin to locate yourself in the clash of civilizations?
Smack dab in the middle, I guess, Brian. I mean, where would I locate myself? Well, at one point I used the phrase constitutional Muslim, because I was brought up by my dad, who is a very conservative, I guess very conservative is a really weird thing to say right now, but he's a conservative, very believing Muslim, but he also, right at the beginning of our lives, when he was teaching us about, you know, people get fairy tales right before they get to bed, he was telling us, you know, the first articles of faith, you know, there's only one God and Muhammad is his messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And the very next thing he taught us was, being a constitutional scholar, that there are three arms of government, and that you're innocent until proven guilty. Some very fundamental and basic principles.
So while I was getting the three little pigs, you were getting the three branches of government.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, I don't see a conflict, at least within myself. You know, I am a creature of the modern world. I am very much a believing Muslim, and I was brought up to believe in what I guess, for want of a better word, a Republican form of government.
And what's your reaction specifically to the Muhammad cartoons and the global reaction to them?
I guess everyone else has had so many reactions and, you know, getting angry about this side or that, that I just am sitting there going, what do I do with that? I'm more concerned about watching what happens within the Muslim community. And, you know, while I agree with almost everything, I just read Ibu's editorial as well. I agree with everything he says, but I think we need to take a more interesting look at it. We are not different. I mean, every community in the world, we're all human beings. We all have our right wing and our left wing and our extremists and our extremists on the other end, you know, the liberal extremists or whatever you might want to call them. So my take on that is, I mean, we need to just understand that we're all like each other.
More alike in fundamental ways than we are different, because we also are very different in many ways.
Yes, I mean, we're different in maybe, you know, the food we eat, or maybe what we eat or what we believe to fill specific needs is what I feel. I mean, we all have our right wing. It's only the words that are different. You know, you listen to someone like Billy Graham, and you listen to someone like one of our Jamaat-e-Islami leaders in Pakistan, and the rhetoric is identical. Only some of the words, and not even all of the words, only some of the words are different.
We can take phone calls for both my guests. From Chicago, Ibu Patel, founder and executive director of the Interfaith Youth Corps, and from Silicon Valley, Sabahat Ashraf, a writer and activist who writes the blog ifuckhere.blogspot.com. That's ifaqueer.blogspot.com. Indian American, Pakistani American, both Muslims, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Well, let me get you guys to talk to each other a little bit. Ibu, do you want to react to anything that he just said?
I think that there's a sila and a sharbatus here. There's a sila of saying we're all the same. I wash my hands before I pray. You wash your hands before you pray. Gosh, we're the same. And then there's a sharbatus of, we are so dramatically different, we can't even have a conversation. I think that to make it through the monsters of the contemporary world, we have to figure out the middle path, which is that I have a unique story and a unique background, but that story and that background has values that are shared with your unique story and your unique background. And we can have a mutually enriching conversation. And it is our various uniquenesses which allow us to do that. I just want to offer one of my favorite examples of this. One of the best-selling poets in America is Rumi. who is a medieval Muslim from Afghanistan, mm-hmm. 13th century. Now, why would America fall in love with a Muslim poet from the medieval world? Well, I think that it is because Rumi reminds America of something that is deep within the American tradition, perhaps best expressed by Whitman. And so I see this fascinating conversation over time. It's what Sufis would call sobay, a mystical conversation on mystical subjects between this 13th century Afghan Muslim and this much more recent American poet. You know, you have Whitman saying things like, "What cities the light or warmth penetrate, I penetrate those cities myself. All islands to which birds wing their way, I wing my way myself." And then you have Rumi saying things like, "I am all orders of being, the circling galaxy, the evolutionary intelligence, the lift and the falling away." And in that, those two pieces of poetry are not the same, but there's such deeply profound resonances between those two that I would much prefer to not talk about what distinguishes them in the beginning of the conversation. I would be interested in talking about what makes them feel so similar, and then after that move on to the distinguishing elements. So that's how I would prefer to have the conversation of how do we, as a broad and diverse human community, figure out how to live on an increasingly small planet together.
It's beautifully put, and I love the Rumi and Whitman examples. But are you preaching to the converted, because the real clash of civilizations in the world today is between people of all faiths or lack of faith who want to work together and those who want to fight it out to the death? And we already know who's on each side. So if what you just said, beautiful as it was, falls on deaf ears to, you know, a small but large enough percentage who follow, say, Osama bin Laden, then what does it matter?
I believe that the Latin American poet said, poetry like bread is for everyone. And so I think that art and culture and these types of discourses can, in fact, make a huge difference. But your point is extremely important, and I'll go back to something that my other colleague said, which is that what we have to recognize is that there are a small group of people, both in the West and in the Muslim world, who are invested in the clash of civilizations. They hope to have cartoons like this published in some of these people in the Muslim world because they want to rile groups of people into anger and violence. They are invested in Islam being a religion of rage and being viewed as a religion of rage, and they are my enemy. Those people are my enemy. Just like there are people in the West right-wing movements in Europe who watch television and celebrated when they saw Muslims going berserk in parts of the Muslim world because they wanted to tell their fellow Europeans, look at these crazy people. Why are we letting them into the Netherlands or letting them into Germany? It's time to move to make Europe pure again. And what I think is an extremely important point here is that these seemingly opposing extremisms, Pat Robertson and Osama bin Laden would rip each other's eyes out if they were in the same room together. But
until they started talking about gay marriage.
Right, exactly. But Brian, these opposing extremisms have a cumulative negative effect on pluralism. And so in some morbid way, bin Laden and Robertson are in the same room together attacking all of us.
We have to take a break, and we will continue with Eboo Patel and Sabahat Ashraf and start to take some of your many calls that are coming in. This is provoking quite a response. 212-433-WNYC. Stay tuned. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with two Muslim Americans who both find themselves in the middle somewhere in the so-called clash of civilizations as exemplified by the dueling values around the Muhammad cartoons issue, free speech, and cultural sensitivity. And I'll say that In my most absurdist moments, I see the Muhammad cartoon debate as a Miller Lite commercial with everyone yelling, less filling and taste great, except it's be sensitive and free speech. And you kind of don't know which value to root for in the given moment, since they're both positive values. But my guests from Chicago, Eboo Patel, founder and executive director of a group called the Interfaith Youth Corps, and from Silicon Valley, Sabahat Ashraf, writer and activist who writes the blog ifuckhere.blogspot.com. And again, Local Boy Makes Good. He used to be an intern for this program back mostly in the 90s. Let's take some phone calls. Nigar in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Okay, I too am a Muslim American, and I consider myself a moderate. I try and integrate myself fully in the community. And I have really been outraged at the reaction to the cartoons in the Muslim world, burning down of embassies and burning down restaurants. And I would like to know, where was the outrage when the Taliban were knocking down statues of Buddha in the Buddhas in Bamiyan? We do, as moderate Muslims, have to take a stand on this and say that this is wrong and unacceptable. Well, one of your guests said a few minutes ago that these people, the extremists, are my enemy too, and I feel that.
Sabahat, you want to jump in?
Well, you know, I don't know whether the word enemy, you know, creates a whole dynamic of its own, but what I'd like to say is, as for where, and again, the word extremist is such a loaded word, there's a political ideology within Islam that you keep hearing the word traditionalist and the phrase medieval mindset, and I really don't see the right wing that we're dealing with here as either traditionalist or medieval. They are very much a creature of the 20th and 21st centuries, because they are globalized, they are based on ideologies that have crossed borders and have, you know, bounced off each other. Most of the leaders are very well educated and to a large extent Western educated. So, and where are the moderates? Well, the moderates are right here. I'd like to ask, you know, people listening, have you gone out and found them? I know we're not organized. The moderates, quote unquote, are not organized, but we're there. You've got to listen to us.
Yes, excuse me. And I do think that the moderates should be speaking out at this time. But like you say, that the extremists and the right wing, they are very much in the 21st century when it suits them, when they're able to use the internet and communicate like that. And yet, they are very much traditionalists in their suppression of women, the role of women. And these things have to be discussed very openly now by Muslims, and by Muslims who want to integrate into communities where they have settled outside the Islamic world. I have children who are growing up here, and I do not want them to be discriminated against just because of the actions of those the lunatic fringe.
Yeah, I miss your name, but no, my point there is I where we agree with being moderates, but I don't agree with you that it's either just an issue of integrating into Western communities or things like that. I don't see a clash between what I believe as a Muslim and I live and how I operate. Like
I think, I think the Muslims should be out there condemning these people, and we are not doing it nearly enough as we should be doing it. I do feel strongly about this, because with our silence, we are more or less acquiescing in their actions.
And Nigar, thank you very much for your call. And Sabah, to this question of leadership, leadership of the moderates, which you say is not out there, and at least in as organized a way as leaders of the fringe. I noticed that you conclude your emails with the following quote: "My religion is humanitarianism, which is the basis of every religion in this world." And you attribute it to Abdusattar Edhi, Pakistan's humanitarian phenom. Who is this humanitarian phenom?
See, now that's actually, I'd really love to leave that question up in the air. Who is this humanitarian phenom? Because everyone's heard about the earthquake in Pakistan, right?
Yeah.
And that was pretty much the largest disaster that has happened in the world in the last how many years? And which was the largest organization in Pakistan working on that issue? And has anyone heard of it in your reader group, in your listener group? That's my question. Abdul Sattar Eadie is a person that is often called Pakistan's Mother Teresa. And he is your average, very religious Muslim. He looks like someone straight out of, I believe, Eboo's ancestral homes out in Gujarat, where the Shalwar Kameez, he has a slight beard. He's very religious. You talk to him, he can barely speak English. But he heads the organization that runs the largest volunteer ambulance organization in the world, period. A very religious Muslim running a charity organization that it does not have a major religious component. Has anyone heard of it?
Right. Let me just say something here. Sabat, I'm so glad you brought up that example. That is Islam. That is the expression of the phrase in the Holy Quran that God sent Muhammad, peace be upon him, to be nothing but a mercy upon the world. That is the active expression of when Muslims begin everything. It's Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate, right? And that is the Islam that I grew up with, is seeing these acts of mercy and compassion, is reading about them in the stories of Muslim civilization. And so when I see what is represented as Islam around the world today, it is totally alien to me. It is absolutely foreign to me. And I think where your previous caller was absolutely right is saying, where is the moderate voice on this? Well, the fact is, the vast majority of Muslims are moderate and are outraged by so much of what's happening. What we lack is institutions which allow for the expression and actionability of this middle path
and
of
that's
this
what,
mercy and compassion.
And that's what you're trying to do with Interfaith Youth Corps?
Absolutely. I think that being a mercy upon humankind is the central value of all religious faiths. And what I'm interested in is people from these different backgrounds coming together and doing that together. And we have wonderful examples of this. I mean, I think of King and Heschel marching together in Selma, and Heschel saying, I felt like my legs were praying. I think of Farid Esak and Desmond Tutu in South Africa. I think of Abdul Ghaffar Khan, a great Muslim leader, and Mahatma Gandhi in villages in India, reading alternately from the Bhagavad Gita and the Holy Quran. Right? I mean, that is our lineage in terms of interfaith collective compassion, and I would like to do as much as possible to nurture that within my generation. And you know, my organization has mashallah, thanks be to God, grown dramatically over the past few years, but it doesn't hold a candle to Al-Qaeda or to Al-Qaeda's equivalent in the Christian world.
So what...
If I may jump in there, I'd also like to point out that in matters of size and scope, your organization, I know it's really wonderful, but doesn't hold a candle to Abdul Sattar Eadie in Pakistan either. And he's been at it for about 50 years now. The question here is, and the question you hear in the Muslim world is, why all, you know, for example, take the Nobel Prize. I'm not a big fan of it myself, but as we keep saying, if it was a fair world, Abdul Sattar Eadie would have gotten the Nobel about 20 years ago. And it took an Iranian human rights lawyer to give it to. Where's the Nobel for Eadie? Has he been nominated? Where's the Nobel for Asma Jahangir, who has come out of Pakistan and later gone on to work on international level? We were talking about lineage, Brian, and how, you know, we're talking about the right wing as our enemy, so to speak. I'd like to say political interlocutor. But the question here is, the West has been, or I use the word very loosely, but folks have been rather latecomers to this party. We've been taking on the religious right wing in our region for three generations now.
Mm.
When you talk about, you know, Eboo has done a very good job of presenting the activist and spiritual side of Islam. I'd like to take a moment out and talk about the constitutional and political side of Islam over the last century and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Because after 9/11, I was telling a friend of mine, listen, these guys are not the only religio-political option out there.
You mean Al-Qaeda?
For example, the founding team of Pakistan, those were people that were interlocutors of Gandhi, but while Gandhi was using extra legal means for whatever else nonviolence is, it does operate outside the law,
mm-hmm.
right? But watch people like Jinnah and Liaquat, the founding team of Pakistan, that we don't hear anything about anywhere outside Pakistan, did was operate within the system. They were dealing with a colonial setup, but they were operating within legal means. They were lawyers. They worked with constitutional means. And what I told my friend was, you tell me there is no lineage politically, but I can trace it right back to what started happening after the War of Independence, or the Mutiny, whatever you want to call it, in India, in 1857, because out of that came the educational efforts of a gentleman called Sir Sayyid Ahmad Khan. He helped found a university and build a movement of Muslims educated in the English and modern tradition, which led directly to the founding of the Muslim League in India, the All India Muslim League, which led to the founding of Pakistan. And in those early days, my father was there. They were working. He was a young student. He was part of those political movements. And the way he brought me up was what I mentioned earlier, teaching me what, you know, proper government looks like in the modern world, and the three arms of government and all of that. But so there is an unbroken political tradition of engagement in how the world is run today as well.
It's a great...
You only have to find it and build on it.
It's a great history lesson, and my guess, if you're just tuning in to WNYC, are activist Eboo Patel and blogger Sabahat Ashraf, both Muslim Americans who see themselves as activist moderates. But based on both of your last answers, why do you think that there isn't the electricity around the leaders like both of you cite, as there is around the radical fringe leaders? Do the conditions of people's lives in Pakistan, for example, and also other countries, not cry out for moderate leadership? It doesn't speak to them because it doesn't seem to address the real problems in their lives. Eboo?
You know, Sabahat probably knows much more about the conditions of people's lives in the Muslim world. Sabahat, why don't you answer that first, and then I'll go next.
I mean, where does one start? I mean, there is a history in the world of you know, colonial and post-colonial setups and how the world is structured. The way I look at it, Brian, is that the last 70 years, or actually the 70 years from 1914 to about the Berlin Wall falling, were an exception in history. And, you know, a lot of things were different from what the flow of history usually is, as in because of the Cold War altercation or tensions, things went into a deep freeze. And a certain structure was set up in the world. And it's not just the Muslim world. What we are seeing around the world now is, as I like to see it, dispossessed people or people that have been shut out of the conversation, grasping for ways of now getting a voice out, now that the Cold War tension, which, you know, basically muffled a lot of what was going on in the world, people are breaking out of that and doing things. Look at South America. America has close to no active Muslim participation, but it's also pushing back against the world order. I know I'm almost descending into cliches here.
But the world
order is changing. People are fighting back. People are pushing back and raising the lid.
Let's get another phone call on. And Eric in Manhattan, I think, wants to take issue, Ashraf, with your equating of the right-wing fringe here, the Christian right-wing fringe in America, and the Muslim right-wing fringe as represented by Osama, etc. Eric in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Good day. Thanks. And also, just now, Mr. Patel said the Christian version of Al-Qaeda. I mean, what exactly do you think is the Christian version of Al-Qaeda?
Well, I think that I'm reading your point. And in that, if your point is that conservative Christians, and by this I do not mean, I mean, I personally,
I think his point is that they're not going around bombing mosques and trade centers and things like that.
Right. No, I agree. Let me quote an interesting Woody Guthrie line, which is, I've been all around the world and I've seen lots of funny men. Some will kill you with a six gun and some with a fountain pen. And there is no doubt that there are people in the world who are very willing to put a gun to your head and kill you. And there are other people in the world who are willing to come out and call the prophet of 1.3 billion people a pedophile, and they know full well that that is going to spark riots in Nigeria and in parts of South Asia and in Indonesia. they know full well that that's going to do that. And so, you know, just because a cannibal is using a knife and a fork, it doesn't mean that they're not a cannibal. And I wish that people would exercise the power that they have with American institutions much more responsibly.
Give me one concrete example of wielding that,
killing somebody
with a pen.
When Reverend Robertson and Reverend Falwell say things directly, like Muhammad is a pedophile and Islam is a religion of violence, point blank. There is immediate rioting.
Do you see the Danish cartoons in that context?
I see the republishing them in a similar context, because what it is, it's a deliberate spear in the eye of a large group of people. Now, I think that the vast majority of American newspapers were exactly right on this, which is we could publish them, but we're not going to, because why would we gratuitously offend people? I also see the Danish cartoons I look at it through the eyes of a contemporary American. I see it to some extent similar to the Willie Horton ad in 1988, when then-candidate Bush put on an ad of a black man who had been furloughed from a Massachusetts prison and went on to do horrible things. And the African-American community and many other communities said, why are you imputing that African-Americans are rapists and murderers? We can't stand that. Why would you even come close to the suggestion of that?
Sadly, we're gonna run out of time in a minute. But some listeners may be thinking, you know, if my religion, if they're not Muslim, if my religion was caricatured as violent, and then groups of my people reacted to that by being violent all over the earth, I'd be embarrassed by them, like someone calling me a cheater, and my response is, I'm so angry, I go out and cheat lots of people.
Brian, that is...
I am embarrassed, but I'm also angry about both sides of this equation.
Mm-hmm. And Ibu?
That's the dominant sentiment in the Muslim world today. It's pure shame at what some Muslims are being stoked to do, and particularly because it is an absolutely antithetical to the example of the Prophet, who was always a man of restraint and reconciliation. And so it is absolutely a contradiction of Islam to respond in ways that burn the sacred symbols of others, whether they're national or religious, and to destroy their property.
And I'm sorry to say that has to be the last word for today. We could keep going for hours with this, and I hope we can have both of you back in the future. I'll conclude with this email that just came in from someone who said, sadly, it's hard to organize a group of people to take to the streets and shout, be reasonable, which the writer attributes to John Stewart.
We might just have to do that, Brian.
We might just have to do that. And having to do that is Sabahat Ashraf, who got the last little word there, a writer and blogger who makes his living as a technical writer in Silicon Valley and covers events in Pakistan, the United States, and elsewhere. You can read his blog at ifuckhere.blogspot.com. That's ifakuer.blogspot.com. Ibu Patel is founder and executive director of the Interfaith Youth Corps and author of the forthcoming book, Building the Interfaith Movement. Thank you both very, very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye-bye. Thank you.